help me, that would be wonderful. All right, everybody has some notes. Tonight's message is, I don't know how to express what I'm going to do tonight. I'm actually going to try to change your mind about something. Now, actually changing behavior is way beyond my competence. And this last week, I received a lovely text from my friend Atong, you know? And it was a picture of Louis Heras. First of all, you do not want to see Louis Heras's picture. It showed up, and instead of being the American, it said the Amalekite. I thought it was good, Atong. I must admit. May I say this to all of you? This will be the most un-American sermon I could preach. I'm going to go against the grain of being an American in a modern era. The only reason I'm going to preach this is this. If you don't learn this, and of course some of you will come up to me afterwards and shake your head in that very knowing way that you knew all of this before the foundation of the world. I get it. But actually, you don't. So I'm going to try to share some very simple ideas about lamenting. And I don't mean by that walking through life depressed. I would say in the 21 years I've been here, you'd have a hard time finding a day I was depressed. Do I know how to lament? And I want you to learn too. So I recognize when I get all done, some of you will kind of glide through this because you already know everything. But for you who don't, I'm going to put two things together tonight that can absolutely, listen to me, transform your life in one small area. This is a pastoral sermon. I don't want money. I don't want you to witness to anybody. It isn't that kind of a sermon. It's something that a pastor must share with his people because we have a problem. Actually, we have a huge problem in this country. And it shows up anytime we lose someone. We don't know how to grieve. Why do you think grieving processes have gone when I was a child to 3 to 4 days? I saw a mother grieve for Gary Powers, my buddy that accidentally hanged himself to death. Every night at the funeral home for 3 or 4 nights, she was at a funeral home. To today, a funeral is 45 minutes of viewing, 30 minutes of funeral. Let's get to the potato salad. You better answer the question. Because what it's done is we have a small group in this church that do not grieve for anybody because they don't have connections. I'm not speaking to you. But we have another group that just don't know how to grieve. So tonight we're going to discuss this. By the way, this isn't religion. It's 2 Samuel 1 and Lamentations and 67 lament psalms. You know, it has something to do with Scripture. Verse 17. And David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan, his son. Also, he bade them teach the children of Judah. And you notice 3 words are in what? What does it mean when words are in italics in the King James? I think this is not saying David wanted the children of Israel to know how to do this. Look up here. Because they already knew. Actually, most modern people believe he's teaching them the bow, the name of the lament. And every modern translation says that because there is no use of here. He's trying to teach the people how to lament. We continue. He says, behold, it is written in the book of Jasher. And then he gives us some of the greatest words ever spoken. The beauty of Israel is slain upon thy high places. How are the mighty fallen? Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ascalon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. You mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew, neither let there be rain upon you, nor fields of offerings, for there the shield of the mighty is vilely cast away. The shield of Saul as though it had not been anointed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. You daughters of Israel, smile and celebrate. Oh, I'm sorry, that's the American translation. No, he says, you daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with other delights, who put an ornament of gold upon your apparel. How were the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thine high places. I am distressed for thee. My brother Jonathan, very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing or surpassing the love of women. Don't take that any place except where it belongs. Look me in the eyes. Do not let any pervert take that any place. David was a king, yes? Sorry, ladies, women didn't mean a lot to him. Women were for two basic things, three. The one I won't mention, guys, I think you can figure it out. The second is having heirs, and the third was political alliances. And kings never ever pretended that their wife was going to be their confidant. Jonathan was the confidant of David. So when it says surpassing the love of women, that's all it means. Got it? Now, yeah, you know, we live, by the way, our dumb Americanism starts showing up here real quick. We continue. How were the mighty fallen and the weapons of war perished? Tonight, we're going to look at the subject of learning to lament. Father, I ask your blessings on this time. May this be a profitable evening. Help me to cover and touch and hit and hammer and encourage on those areas that need. And for this, I think a large group in this room might be interested in learning something about lamenting. Help me to be able to share these ideas, I ask, in Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. This morning, I mentioned my grandfather getting saved at age 73. Would you consider that a pretty spectacular thing? By the way, when I say getting saved at 73, I don't mean he got saved. He got saved and actually started going to church and the whole thing at 73. Grandpa started going to church. Grandma went with him, scary as that is. Grandpa died 3 years later. I don't know what year it was. Early 80s, Jenny, do you know what year it was? Was it 86? He was almost two or was two. Grandpa died 3 years after salvation. When he died, my wife and I went to the funeral. I'm not saying this, please, I'm not saying this in a negative way. I'm saying this in a negative way about American Christianity. We went to the funeral. The pastor of the church that he got saved in was a Bob Jones University grad, and you knew him. Is that correct? He was a good guy. His view of a sermon for a funeral was preaching the gospel and spent a great deal of time talking about hell. In his sermon, he never mentioned my grandfather getting saved. In his sermon, he never said much about my grandfather. It was a sermon on coming to Jesus, fleeing hell. By the way, the gospel is important, yes? Do you know why? Because where I'm from, if you're a Baptist, you got to pronounce it right, Baptist, preach the gospel, brother. Tell them how to get saved. in that way too. Here's the problem. Does anybody listen at a funeral? The answer is nobody listens at a funeral. People walk away from that funeral thinking, that's the worst thing I've ever heard. When I got done with the funeral, I was angry and I'm saved. Well, I don't need to tell you. We now have in this country, now where I'm from, they're still going to preach those kind of sermons. Every sermon in a funeral is going to be how to get saved. That's better than the other kind. Have you been to them? We're going to have a celebration. We're going to what? Because the last thing you would ever want to do is cry one teardrop. So we become Harry Carey in Chicago. When that drunken fool died, he's in heaven drinking a beer with Jesus looking down on us. Celebrate! And in the between, we just struggle. We struggle to grieve. We don't know how. We appear to be fools. Now, I've also been to the funerals where the preacher tells you, you know, he yells and screams, we ought to have the victory. You're like, victory over what? So when Mr. Losey died, boy, praise the Lord, glad that old man's gone. What's wrong with us? I want to ask you a question, and do not answer it, and I don't want pious looks out of a half a dozen of you. Some of you are very pious. You don't recognize your look. You already know everything before I say it. I want to ask you, when we get done with this sermon, I'd be very curious if you've spent any time grieving over Mr. Losey, and even if you would know what it means, and you would know how to do it. Or is Mr. Losey yesterday's news? That's our problem. We have lost the ability to lament. Maybe we've never had it. I don't know. In my childhood, when I did my dad's funeral, I had an unsaved aunt walk right up to me. Uncle Cook's wife walked right up to me. She said, that's the best funeral I've ever been at. Because I actually talked about something that dealt with humanity, as opposed to preaching a sermon on how to get saved or talking people into heaven that hated God. Have you been to those sermons? All right. I'm not going to go any further. In your notes, I'm not going to say anything tonight except three verses. Wow. The three verses are right here. If you understand these three verses, you will understand how to lament. In verse 11, when David first hears the news, and he does hear the news, it says, David took hold of his clothes and he rent them, and likewise all the men that were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until even for Saul and for, by the way, do you even feel the pain? And for Jonathan his son, and for the people of the Lord, and for the house of Israel, because they were fallen by the sword. By the way, the moment you hear someone you love is gone, this, underneath that 1:11 through 12, this is the immediate mourning. Look at me. This is not lamenting. This is the immediate grief that everybody has except those people who have no connections to humanity. In our church, two or three people that don't seem to have connections emotionally. Most of us weep at least kind of. You say, do you weep? I weep probably more than most people in this room. But I don't weep in the way you think. And I'm not trying to brag. I weep more than I thought weeping was wrong because I'm not an Amalekite, Louis. I am an American. And real men. Well, verse 17 is different. It says, and David lamented with this. The lamentation here is a poem. Yes? He's saying, David, this is different than the first one. The first one's that immediate mourning, and then there's the formal lamenting. And really, the whole sermon's those two ideas. All right, let's move on. And let me give you some ideas that may help you. Frenchie got into my notes slightly. I don't really care that he got into my notes, but I would prefer my notes to be equal. I get perfectionistic on small things. So I'll give you both of these. Number one, what in the world does lament do for us? What's the purpose of lament? We're not going to read the text again. We're going to ask, what is lament? How does it help us? What's its purpose? Number one, and this should be no shock, lament. Look up here, folks, lament. You can write this down. I think you can remember this for over 30 seconds. Lament does something. When you have formal lament, it does something for you. It gives language for your grief. What happens when you hear someone dies that you love? You fall apart. Is that correct? Look at me. That is not lament. That's the initial response. Of course, I love Mr. Losey. But I would be curious how many people have wept in the last year or however long it's been. Have you spent time? But by the way, we don't get the lamenting. We get the emotions. And then there's intelligent people to say, I hope they hurry up and get over those emotions and quit crying. And by the way, both people are wrong. Lamenting gives language for our grief. And when I say grief, I mean by that these words: sorrow, loss, pain, and suffering. I'm not going to read the first two verses. We've already read them. Verse 17, when it says, "And David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son, and he bade them teach the children of Judah the bow." The ESV leaves the word bow out. I don't know why. It should be there. But the ESV says, "And David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and Jonathan his son, and he said it should be taught to the people of Judah," meaning the lament should be taught to the people, which is what this text means. This text is not a military text saying you need to learn how to use a bow. They already knew how. This is a text saying David wanted the people to lament with certain language. Language is the key. By the way, may I say something? Do you have great language? How many of you have poetry on your tongue? You know, you read someone like Spurgeon and you're like, if I lived 100 lifetimes, I couldn't come up with those paragraphs in 100 lifetimes. Sometimes he could just say things and you're just like, where does that come from? By the way, do you realize part of our problem is we don't have language to communicate? Look at me in the eyes. Are you a flat speaker? You don't have poetry? Yes or no? I have no poetry. Wish I did. If I have poetry, I have to steal it from somebody. Look at me. That's the point. He says, I want you to lament over Saul and over Jonathan, like with these words, so you have language in which to express yourself. Dale Ralph Davis does a beautiful job. And why that reverted back to that, I don't know. Wow, that's weird. Let's read Dale Ralph Davis. He said this: a lament is a formal expression of grief or distress. One that can be written, read, learned, practiced, repeated. It is a vehicle for the mind as well as for the emotion. An expression of thoughtful grief. The intensity of one's emotions unite with the discipline of one's mind in words that convey our anguish, in images that picture our despair, in written prayers that verbalize despondency. My friend, there is something rich when you start to borrow language. Turn your notes to the other side. We're going to come back. This is not exactly the song we have in our hymn book. If you look this song up, it has like 10 stanzas. Some of the words are a little different here, but this is one of my favorite songs. Wait a minute. Why do we sing hymns? Because we're borrowing language. Why? Because most of us aren't very poetic. Who was poetic? I'm thinking there was a fellow named Charles Wesley that was pretty poetic. I think Isaac Watts was pretty poetic. I think these guys were born quoting poetry. And then there's me, and then there's you. O sacred head, now wounded, with grief and shame weighed down, now scornfully surrounded with, and this is a little different than us, with thorns, thine only crown. O sacred head, what glory, what bliss till now was thine. Yet though despised and gory, I joy to call thee mine. What thou, my Lord, hast suffered was all for sinners' gain. Mine was the transgression, but thine the deadly pain. Lo, here I fall, my Savior, tis I deserve thy place. Look on me with thy favor, vouchsafe to me thy grace. What language can I borrow to thank thee, dearest friend, for this thy dying sorrow, thy pity without end? Oh, make me thine forever, and should I fainting be, Lord, let me never, never outlive my love to thee. I couldn't write that if I lived 100 lifetimes. Now, Brian, everybody look over here. He's under Bowder at Central Seminary. You are learning to write poetry whether you want to or not, correct? Noel is a scholar in poetry too, right, Noel? Look at me. You say, what's the purpose of lament? My friend, weeping is not enough. You have to be able to say things. You have to be able to capture things. You have to be able to put things together. You have to be able to speak. So in the midst of your weeping, you can say something. You can use the brain and the heart. Turn back to the previous page. We're not going to read all these verses for just simply because it's too much. Under Dale Ralph Davis, Ralph Warren makes a very small, simple comment. And by the way, if you're an emotional person, I'm speaking directly to you. When you learn to use lament, meaning formal use of language, I not only feel something, I can say something about my feelings. It's not blathering. It's not crying. It's the ability to stand back and take emotion and words and unite them and to lament with something that at the end of the lamentation, you are strengthened, you are drawn closer to whatever you're lamenting, it's lifted you up, it's done something for you. But most of us don't have language for that. Therefore, we must be language thieves. Unless you're different than me. And there are people different than me. Caitlin, the young lady in 10th or 11th? She has a real thing with language. I've seen some people that have things with language. There's a couple of others. I have zero. I have no creativity. You know, when creativity was passed out, I didn't know what the word meant, so I went to the next line. Now, let's read some creativity that you're not going to want to read. You ever heard of the book of Lamentations? Chapter 2, verse 14. By the way, 2 Samuel gives you the rhythm. How are the mighty fallen? How are the mighty fallen? How are the... It's the passion. It's the words. Lamentations 2:14 says, thy prophets have seen vain and foolish things for thee, and they have not discovered thine iniquity to turn away thy captivity, but have seen for thee false burdens and causes of banishment. All that pass by clap their hands at thee. They hiss and wag their head at the daughter of Jerusalem, saying, is this the city that all men call the perfection of beauty, the joy of the whole earth? It's like, where's it at? For time, I'll let you work through this. Friend, please look at me. Why is lament important? Look, blathering is not enough. Today, at our 32nd funerals, there's just not enough lamenting to help anybody. So we have to take this upon ourselves. But it's not spending the next 10 years blathering. It's actually doing what the Bible... Would you believe there's a book called Lamentations? Would you believe there are 67 Psalms of lament? Did you hear me? One of them is so depressing that the last time I read it publicly, IJ asked me to never read it publicly again. You say, why? Because one psalm, there is no positive any place, including the end. Psalm 88. But it gives language. By the way, you're in Egypt today. Let's celebrate! That's the talk of fools, which we have become. So we can get back to TV tonight and get back to our video games and get back to our Facebook and get back to our escape. Number two, lament or lamenting gives. And Frenchie left the word us here. It's okay, but it either needs to be in every place or not in any place. Lament or lamenting gives us time for our grief. I think one of the hardest things we have in America is we just don't have the time for grief. What I'm going to do now is we're going to read one of the most important passages. It's also about this whole subject. The author of Ecclesiastes says, "To everything there is a season, a time." And that word, Hebrew word for time, is only used, well, you're going to read it where it's used. It's only used three other times. It means, look up here, folks, a formal set time. Otherwise, the Bible's telling you there are times for you, not for religion, not for Pastor Warren, for you to set aside times and ways where you spend the time formally lamenting whatever it is. We'll talk about that in a moment. That's the Hebrew word. You don't need to know what it is, but that's what it means. He goes on to say, there's a time to be born, time to die. There's a time is a time to plant and a time to be to pluck up that which is planted. There's a time to kill and there's a time to heal. There's a time to break down and there's a time to build up. There's a time to weep and there's a time to laugh. Is that true? No, it's not true. If you're an American, don't kid yourself. We think it's wrong to lament. All right, I'm going to ask you a hard question. 9/11, was that traumatic? How many times have you seen it on television since 9/11? Count it up. Zero. Unless you have seen a special. We don't do well with lamentation. We don't want to take life that seriously. We want to move on to being ha, 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 rah, 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 party, 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 let's have fun. But the problem is we don't know how to grieve. So we're on emotional messes. Okay, we move on. There's a time to weep and there's a time to laugh. There's a time to mourn and a time to dance. In the context of what that means, there's a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. Ecclesiastes 3:11, the beginning line says about God, God hath made everything beautiful in his time. If you go back up to verse 1, when in verse 1 it says, to everything there is a season and a time. That particular Hebrew word for time is found in these references. In Esther, it says, the Jews ordained and took upon them and upon their seed and upon all such as joined themselves into them, so as it should not fail that they would keep these 2 days according to their writing and according to, the King James puts the italicized word, but it actually means this, an appointed time every year. So, look at me. Jewish people were to celebrate Purim or Purim every year. It was a set apart time. Here's our problem. Are you listening? I told you everything you're going to learn is when they heard the news, they broke down and wept. And then they moved to lamentation, which is different than just weeping. It's when you move forward and you now have language to start capturing your loss. You now have time set aside to think about your loss. We will continue. It's found in Esther 9:31. To confirm these days of Purim in their appointed time. It's found a third time in Nehemiah. And the king said unto me, now this is the pagan king, the queen also sitting by him, for how long shall thy journey be, and when will thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a what? He didn't say, well, you know, whenever I get around to it. No, he says, I'll be back at such and such a date. Look at me, friend. What does lament does? It gives us language, and it gives us time or times for grief. In your notes, Ecclesiastes reminds us about these things. First of all, about time. You have to take the time. Next, about an appointed time. Or if you prefer, a set time. Now, here's where we get in trouble. Pastor Warren is going to make everybody angry. I know I will not look at any of the pious people, because pious people always know what I believe and I'm going to say before I say it, and it irritates me to death. Sorry. Do we have holidays in America that Americans have set aside for the purpose of remembering and, frankly, lamenting? Let's think. July, Memorial Day. And what do Americans, pious people, don't say anything. What do Americans do with those 3 days? 3 day weekends. Go, go, go. Do you not see we have a problem? Have you never asked yourself why you've not seen 9/11 on TV, at least at an anniversary, have an hour where we set aside and mourn? Oh, no. No, no, no. Let's get back to the comedy. Let's tell jokes. Let's drink beer. Let's eat. Let's play video games. Let's watch TV. We don't have set times. Do you? Now, you say, why do I care? I'm a pastor, and I start recognizing people in my church, their emotions are a disaster. And the reason our emotions are a disaster is we're not following biblical counsel. And biblical counsel understands the immediate result of loss when you're brokenhearted. That's appropriate. But it assumes that you as a believer know something, that you go from this to this called lament. And you set aside, look at me, language and time for formal grieving. As opposed to sitting in your room crying, now you moved on and you're saying, I'm going to set aside some time to do this. Well, let's look at these notes, and I'll give you more of this. Ecclesiastes reminds us about, first of all, about time, about an appointed time or a set time, about formal time. That replace, you see, he's talking about the formal time or times that replace the informal or the spontaneous times. When Sam Labasi died, if you were human, you wept. Yes? Well, maybe not. Because, see, I believe we have problems in this church. We don't connect to people. There were people in this church broken. That's natural. But by the way, that's a lot of lament. And for some of us, Sam Labasi is long distant memory. Who cares about Sam? I'm watching TV tonight. Well, see, as a Christian, we recognize we must move from that informal, that which just happens, to more of a formal thing that you do. Listen, I came from an unsaved father. My unsaved father had some absolute rules on this. Once or twice a year, it was his choice. My family got together in a car, drove up, and we did some things with the gravestone, with his mother. By the way, I never met my grandmother. She died in 1945. We cleaned that grave. We put flowers on that grave. We'd put flags on all of our family members. You say, why? My unsaved father understood lament better than Christians, who simply, let's get back to TV. But the problem is it's made us emotionally a disaster. We don't know how to deal with emotions. We don't know how to love people. We go through life as passing ships in the night. It's an embarrassment. So it is formal times that replace the informal, spontaneous times. Look at me, friends. Well, do I say it in here? No. If I can say it in a nutshell, look at the front page of your notes. I already told you everything I'm going to say tonight's in three verses. Do you know what I'm really talking about? I'm talking about this. I'm talking about going from chapter 1, verse, what verse is it? 11 and 12, which is the spontaneous weeping for Jonathan and Saul, to a formal time when we borrow language so we can actually speak about how we feel. And not only that, So we have time set aside. But may I say this? Most of us, three-day weekend, I'm going someplace. And I'm not opposed to you going someplace. But frankly, that's all we do is go someplace. And the things that ought to be part of a Christian, deep matters of the heart, we seem pretty shallow. I said we. Look back at the notes, please. I believe this. Ecclesiastes reminds us about time, about an appointed time, about formal time or times that replace the informal, spontaneous times, that God makes everything beautiful in His time. Number three, lamenting does exactly three things, and the last one is the most important, and if you don't get the process, you'll never get the word. Oh my goodness, I said this morning, if you stick with me, you will have an aha moment. Got an aha moment? A life-changing moment. Lamenting gives closure to our grief. Just look at verse 17. And David lamented with this lamentation, and he bade them teach the children of Israel this lamentation, titled Bow. He not only wanted to use it, why? Well, let me give you some thoughts, and then I'm going to get down to practice. Many people struggle with closure. Is that right? My wife's dad died when you were, how old, Jenny? Tim, how old were you when your dad died? He was 9, my wife was 10. I'm going to ask both of you, how much did they counsel you and talk to you when your dad died? None. You act like it didn't even exist. That's being a wonderful, dumb American. She grew up in a Bible-believing church. Who cares about kids? Do you realize people carry those scars their whole life? Especially when you don't find closure for the loss of parents when you're a kid. He said before publicly, at least for some times in your life, you felt like you were the reason your dad died. You must have done something. Yeah, but who cares about this? What's on TV? Let's go home and play solitaire. Let's play a video game. May I say this? Do you realize I find Americans fools? And I am one. It's an embarrassment to me. It's an embarrassment to me as a pastor that I know we have a three-day weekend almost every month, and 95% of people, their thought is leaving. Now, some can't afford it, and some have to work. But everybody, I got to go someplace. We have sacred days set aside, and we don't even think about them. And 9/11, the greatest disaster in my lifetime, is nothing. The children in my Bible class will learn about 9/11 as they do every year. Because the kids there, Atong, your daughters, how old were they when it happened? 1. I started showing this 10 years ago because I realized kids had never seen any of this stuff. You say, why? Don't you want to remember something other than your belly button and your emotions? We continue. Many struggle with closure. This is the aha stuff coming. It might be because they are pressured to find closure. And of course, when I say closure, I don't mean biblical closure. I mean this. Stop weeping, moping, and crying. Because I don't like people around me who cry a lot. Amen? So people start feeling pressure from other Christians that you're crying too much. Look at me, friend. If you cry too much, that I don't have a problem with your tears. I'm not sure that some of us understand what I'm talking about, but I want to get you there. Continue. Most think closure is stopping. You see, here I am. I went through this great loss, wherever it was. When I had this great loss, I cried like a baby. I had all these emotions, and this is what closure is. Look at me. Here's closure. I stop crying, and I stop thinking about that person, and I stop meditating on that person, and I get on with my life and have a party. Woo!
Woo! Where's the party at?
That's what people think closure is. Well, I'm going to give you the aha moment. Are you ready? Actually, closure is transition. Be ready to write, and then I'll explain. Closure is transition from spontaneous to formal. You move. Yes, there is a time to move from spontaneously falling apart. That does not mean, listen, Tim, somebody should have set you down and my wife down and every other person that lost a parent and should have talked to them. But I already know your mother probably didn't want to mention anything, and Jenny's mother, not trying to be cruel, lied to the family about, you know, her dad was perfect, walked on water, and could jump tall buildings in a single bound, which doesn't help you with life. So you go out into life, and you have never mourned anything. The key is not stopping. The key is learning to transition from what? The spontaneous crying to a formal lamenting, which, look at me, has words, set times, and can bring you closure. Well, I'll get to that. Let's continue. I believe that this is, and I believe it's taught in this passage. It's their moving from chapter 1, verse 11 and 12 to that falling apart to chapter 1, verse 17 and 18 to a formal lament. And that's the closure, the transition, when we leave the spontaneous to a formal. Let me give you another way of saying it. From outburst, which, by the way, is nothing wrong with an outburst, to intentional. From outburst to intentional lamenting. From, and I'm not trying to be cruel about this, but you have to listen. From this primarily being about you to being primarily about the other person. And that takes some time. You say, what are you getting at, Pastor Warren? It takes time. When tragedy happens, you start by thinking about yourself, how you're going to miss Sam Labasi, Samwise Gamgee. Later on, you transfer to Sam, and you can mourn the loss of Sam. There is a transition. In a nutshell, well, I'll say something before I go on. When Sam Labasi died, Betty, most of you know, no secret, by the way, I'm not going to lie. If you're looking for the pastor that lies, go to the other churches. Betty fell apart. Yes? Is she the only one that's fallen apart? How about Rick Lavalette, another one of the best men that ever came to this church? How's that been working? You say, why? Because these people are never taught how to lament. Betty came to me, and if she just couldn't get her mind around things, and I don't know her background, I'm not mad at her. Love Betty. Things are not good. Betty came to me, and she says, Pastor, I feel like I'm going to forget. One day I'm going to get up and spend all day and forget Sam one day. And I looked at her, look at me, everybody, and I said, yes, and that day will happen. Won't it? Is that bad or good? Do you mean you need to think about losing your husband for the next 50, 60, 70 years every single day? But here's the problem. Are you listening? Here's the reason she can't get closure. Because she wants to maintain what initially happens. The weeping and the falling apart. You can't live like that. You need to transition to formal, look at me, language and times, which then brings closure. So instead of every day I feel like I need to get up and weep some because otherwise I'm not honoring my husband or my child or my grandpa or Mr. Losey or Rick Lavalette. No, you transition to formal language and formal times so you don't worry about not crying like that because you've set aside times that you are formally going to lament. I told her, I said, you're going to forget to. I can't say I think of Sam Labasi every day. I'm pretty sure I'm not supposed to think of Sam every day. Does that mean I have forgotten Sam? Or a whole bunch of other people that I love very much? Now, I'm going to bring this all. Did you get the aha? So what's the aha? What's the one word? It's a transition from the initial to a formal. from when you go into the outburst, look at me, but it takes, remember this takes character and stuff. Why did my unsaved father get this and so many Christians don't? I know people in my family, I said, you know, I want to take you out where our family that migrated into the southern Illinois are buried. They said, I don't want to go there. And I'm thinking, I don't get this. You came from someplace. Did you know that? You don't have to go out to a cemetery and weep and cry for a week and pray to your ancestors. But there comes a time when you need to know who you are, where you came from. And there's these formal times and words. So I'm going to say this, and if I get, I don't want to get emotional because I don't have emotions. I've had several bubble-headed women tell me that. When I go to the Philippines, I like to go to the Manila Cemetery. The Manila Cemetery is the American cemetery in Manila. I've said it before. We have one in the Pacific, 21 or so, 22, 20 in Europe. One in England, one in Tunisia, I believe. Most of them are in France. One of them is the one you know about is on Normandy Beach. But there's actually a bunch from World War I and World War II. A little bit from the maybe Spanish-American War II. But only one in the Pacific. I like to go there. You say why? First of all, it's a beautiful place. American Cemetery, some of the most beautiful places you've ever put your eyes. They're perfect. You go to Manila, it's ugly. You go to that cemetery, it's immediately beautiful. Everything is cut perfectly, aligned perfectly. You drive up to that place, and I don't go out among the stones. The people are buried. In the center, I've shown you the picture, there's a center of stones. They're tall stones. There's actually two rows. They go like this. They go in a semicircle one way, semicircle the other. I don't remember which one starts, but they go from, they have Navy, they have Marines, they have Army, they have Air Force. They have all, and is that all of them? Coast Guard, too. They have them all. I go there. What, I'm going to ask you a question. Why do I go there? Because I want to give thanks formally to the people that saved this nation. And you look at those stones, and by the way, the stones, the big tall stones, are the men whose bodies were never found. 16 or 17,000 Americans and Filipinos mixed together. Two rows on each stone. By the way, if you want to know if Pastor Warren's serious, I'll rain hell down on you if you're not listening. I consider this sacred duty. And I consider it one of the problems why we never take anything seriously in America. Everything has to go to drinking and a joke. Everything. I go there and I start looking at the names. American names, Filipino names. I do the same thing every year. I get around to the Navy side. I'm going to look for S. I'm a Navy guy. The reason you can't find closure is because you're afraid you're going to forget to remember. But if you have formal lament, you don't ever forget. You have times that you have set aside where you're not running to your cousin's, brother's, uncle's, friend's barbecue because it just happens to be on this three-day weekend. You actually spend time with you and your family remembering those things. It would be an abomination if this church didn't remember Mr. Losi. An abomination. It would be an abomination if they didn't remember Linda's dad. Yes? I go there, look at the names, find the Sullivan brothers. They're listed together. I always say very formal words. What was supposedly said when the mother and dad found out about 6, 6:30 in the morning, when an officer, a chief, and a doctor showed up at their door. Dad getting ready to go to work. They came inside, and the officer said something to this effect. I have news of your sons. And the mother, which one? All five. Now, You can go back tonight and play your stupid games. Or you can tonight grow up. I'm not asking you to weep every night. I'm actually trying to get some of you to find closure. But it's biblical closure. You know why it's closure? Because you know something. Mr. Losey's gone. I don't have to go pray. I don't have to psych my... All I got to do is take a walk. Hello? Just take a walk. Gene Losey would walk in here. In the years he was in this church, he never came to me and said, I got a problem. He always came to me and said, I fixed. All I got to do is walk out here among the stuff. The John Deere tractor. Yes? And I lament. Do I fall apart? I don't care if I get emotional or not. I do exactly what the Bible wants us to do. I have language. I have time. And I have closure because I'll do it again. You don't have to worry about forgetting people. If you, as an intentional Christian, set aside times to do so. By the way, have you been to this little place called Gettysburg? I don't know how you don't weep your eyes out there. I had a family member that fought there. How do you walk in Gettysburg and, what's for lunch? Let's hurry up. Well, here's the difference between a person that knows how to lament. So in conclusion tonight, here's your entire, look at me, your entire Christianity comes down to this. Unless you are a perverted, twisted person, everybody weeps for Sam Labasi. Some Christians find words, find times, look at me, and find closure because they transition to what? Lament. They know there's going to be times they set aside to remember his orange pants. Friend, I can see him walking out of that door, and I'd look at him and like, what does he have on tonight? And he would always say to me these very intelligent things. I said it in the funeral. He'd say, Pastor Warren, you have style too. Boring. Say, how do you remember that? It's part of my what? Lament. Father, thank you for your word tonight. Forgive us for